Today on the Dominic Inyart Show, or is it today? Was it yesterday? What day is it? Okay, anyways, on this episode of the Dominic Inyart Show, we are talking about chastity and what makes chastity so, so important. This one is just for the fellas, all that and more right here on the Dominic Inyart Show. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country, and welcome to the Dominic Inyart Show. I am your host, Dominic Inyart. And today is Tuesday, March 8th, 2022. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Dominic, you've got the wrong day. Today is Wednesday, March 9th, 2022. And if you're listening on the website on KGOV.com, you see in the big header letters, Wednesday's broadcast, which, by the way, what lunatic was in charge of spelling Wednesday? He did a terrible, terrible job, just abysmal, zero stars. But I don't have it wrong. Today is Tuesday. Right now, as I am saying these words, I am looking at my calendar here. And yep, it says March 18th. 2022 at 10 p.m. Oh, wow. It's late right now. So what's going on? And well, as you are hearing this broadcast, I am most likely in the Denver Capitol testifying against what is considered the most radical pro-abortion bill in the nation. And I talked about this on yesterday's show. And so what you're hearing right now, well, I suppose cat is out of the bag. It isn't live. Today's show is not live. I recorded this through the miracle of technology last night at about 10 p.m. on Tuesday, March 8th, 2022. And you'd be correct in saying that today is March 9th, Wednesday. So I think it's just funny recording Wednesday's show on a Tuesday. I mentioned that yesterday. I talked about going to the Capitol, which is true. But in reality, for me, as I'm saying these words, it was not yesterday. It was today. And so that begs the question, is time relative? No, just kidding. We're not talking about that. I just thought that was kind of funny. As you're hearing this right now, I ask you to say a prayer both for me and all the other Christians testifying against this radical bill, and that you pray for our wisdom and boldness. You know, Agape Kingdom Fellowship, Colorado Right to Life, and so many others are there. But today we're not talking about any of that. We are talking about chastity. And yesterday was International Women's Day. Hope all you ladies had a wonderful day yesterday. And now I feel all bad because today's show, it's for the fellas. And I didn't do a show for the ladies yesterday. And so people will say I'm biased, and sue me, whatever. But yeah, today we're talking about chastity, which is a difficult topic to navigate. Now, chastity, that's a bit of an old-fashioned word, if you're unfamiliar. It essentially means sexual morality. If you are chaste, you are sexually moral, and if you are unchaste, you are sexually immoral. And it's not to be confused with celibacy, which is a state of abstaining, so to speak, from marriage and sex. And, you know, people will take a vow of celibacy, which means they plan on never getting married. And those are, those are two different things. And so you can see why I, as a 20-year-old guy, not married, right, might find some difficulty in navigating this topic. And the title of this show is Just for the Fellas. And if the ladies, if you want to listen, you know, I think that's probably fine. But I don't understand your struggles, so I'm not going to market my findings to you, but rather I do know the struggles of the fellas. And so I'm going to talk about that. And this show, I'm marketing it just to the fellas. You know, my brothers in the Lord, and they are my my target demographic, so to speak, here. And I've been thinking about doing a show like this for a while, but I've always felt kind of awkward about it because, you know, I'm a single guy, single meaning I'm not married, and I've read a lot of writings and watched a lot of sermons and listened to a lot of podcasts and preachers and whatnot, all talking about this issue, chastity. And I've noticed one theme with all these people who talk about chastity and overcoming sexual immorality, whatever it is, they're all a bunch of really old married dudes. And so simply from osmosis, I've learned that you can only teach about sexual morality if you're an old married dude, which now that I'm saying that out loud, I think about Jesus, who was, you know, he was 33 and he was teaching about sexual morality. So I suppose that's not completely true, but that's, you know, I had that idea just via osmosis imparted into me. And I don't want to discredit anything these people say, of course. I've learned a lot from all of these old married dudes, and I'm absolutely ecstatic to learn from them because they have walked the walk before I have, and they know what it's like in large part. So I can learn from their mistakes, and they can teach me, and there is a tremendous wealth of knowledge in that. But simultaneously, on the flip side of the coin, I've always thought, you know, man, I wish I could get my hands on something solid that comes from a single guy, someone like me. And then perhaps I could really connect with him and we could be feeling the same thing as he's teaching me. So there's not that natural disconnect. And now C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity, he has a chapter on chastity, which I love Lewis, as y'all know. And Lewis, he was married. Then as I was reading through his chapter on chastity, I realized that he wrote this before he got married. And he was talking about chastity. Being a single guy, he was talking about this. And he had some of the same concerns I have about discussing chastity before being married. And but he went ahead and because he thought it was important enough to do so. And now I follow in his footsteps. But there is still another disconnect that even C.S. Lewis wasn't able to encourage me with. He was still old. And when I say old, what I mean is he wasn't in his 20s or his teens. That's what I mean. When I hang out with my friends, I'm hanging out with people in their 20s. So if you're 40, which is, you know, middle-aged, to me, that's old. But he was 54 when he wrote Mere Christianity. Also, Lewis wasn't around when hardcore pornography was readily accessible. And so that's a hindrance we have today that he didn't have to worry about. And of course, sexual immorality has always been one of the biggest downfalls of Christians throughout history, you know, thinking back to King David even. And I wouldn't want to in any way discount the struggles of Lewis' time, but, you know, they had it a little bit different. And right now, I am the first generation in human history to be raised in a climate like what we have today in America. And so I have some of the same concerns that Lewis had with a few more about talking about this. There's obviously a lot of dangers with a young guy teaching about sexual immorality and chastity, because when you're younger, you know, the temptation is so prevalent. And so my hope with this isn't to by any means set myself up as a standard. Of course, Christ is the only standard. But thinking back to when I learned Lewis was single when he wrote about chastity, I was so encouraged. I can't even really articulate very well how much that meant to me as, you know, a young guy trying to become chaste. And I would hope that today I might be able to pass a similar form of encouragement down the line. And if there are other guys, young guys specifically, just to tell them, hey, I'm here and I'm with you and I want to help. And I want you to help me. I want, you know, Galatians 6:2 says we should bear one another's burdens. And now as I go through chastity, I'd like to point out that C.S. Lewis did make a significant impact on me. And I'm sure that some of that will bleed through today. I take some issue with some of what he said, mostly in regards to modesty. But even still, what he said had an impact on me. And so chastity, right, as Lewis said, is the most unpopular of the Christian virtues. There is no getting away from it. The Christian rule is either marriage with complete faithfulness or else total abstinence. So I suppose in application, what does that mean? And in order from most obvious to least obvious, no adultery, no fornication, no porn. You know, you are a young, unmarried guy. You shouldn't be seeking sexual release. No looking at girls in public and having a dirty mind. No looking at your phone and having a dirty mind. No looking at artwork and having a dirty mind. I mean, not having a dirty mind in general. And when I go through this list, by now I've probably lost about 50% of the fellas, because fellas like doing that stuff, and it's ingrained very deeply within us, and which, thank God, by the way, he designed us to have a strong sex drive, and that was intentional. But because of that, most guys will hear this and think, man, that's not even possible. Why should I even try that? And Well, for now, let's not worry about the difficulty level. We need to talk about that. That is a very crucial topic when it comes to chastity. But before we do, I'd like to answer the question, why should I even try? So answering that question, the second part of that, why should I even try? And obviously, first and foremost, because we are called to obey the Lord and his word. And that is what his word teaches. But I say that, and a lot of people won't feel content with that. And I myself did not feel content with that for a long period in my life. And see, when I say obey the Lord your God, what I am not saying is I'm not saying do something stupid because God says to. Right? That is not what I'm saying. I'm not saying to do something dumb because God says to do it. What I am saying is that, hey, if God is telling us to do something, he has a very good reason for it. And right now, I'd like to unpack what I think that reason is, or at least some of what that reason is. Why does God tell us to be chaste? And you know, I say it's uncomfortable. People don't feel content with just thinking, oh, God says this, so this is enough, that should be enough to make us content, but I realize that it's not. And so I believe that if we unpack God's logic here a little bit, it will help us to feel content with the notion, okay, God's being reasonable here, and I'm going to try. And we're not even to the point of thinking I'm instantly going to be chaste, or anything like that, of course. But simply, I am going to try. And I've been trying hard to be chaste since I was about 16 years old. That's when it hit me that, hey, unchastity is an issue in my life and that I need to fix it. And when I was 16, I knew I had to be chaste because the Bible said that, but I didn't have the greatest grasp as to why. Why did the Bible say that? Why does the Bible place such emphasis on chastity? And I found out why when I was 17 years old. 1 year later, 1 year after I was 16 and it hit me, hey, I need to be chaste, I finally understood why. And there was a man of the church who I respected tremendously. So I still do. And I told him, and now I'm not going to repeat his name on the show. I told him, I've become addicted to pornography in the last year. And I had confessed that to people before, but being a kid who hadn't even graduated high school, telling that to one of the adults at the church, it was not comfortable. And when I did, he told me a story. Now, this guy, he works with a lot of unbelievers, and he told me about some interactions that he had with them, and he told me about one specifically, and when he told me that, it was like, boom, it clicked. I understood instantly. I like, it was, you know, like the wool had been pulled from my eyes. I understood why. And so he's telling me this story. These unbelievers had spent months talking about all the women that they've slept with, and dozens of women. And so it was so many that they couldn't even remember their names. That's how many it was. They were just, you know, it was like they were treating them like trophies, like tasks that had to be accomplished and like things that had been conquered. And the man from my church, one day, he was so fed up with them. He told them, don't you see what you're doing? You are burning out your ability to fall in love. You're burning out your ability to fall in love. Now, I suppose, let me back up a bit here. See, when God designed marriage, there would be two people, a man and a woman, and they would leave their parents and become one flesh. I'm sure you've heard that a thousand times. And notice how it doesn't say one couple, or it doesn't say one pair, or it doesn't say one any other non-physical word. It says one flesh, which flesh, that is a physical word. And that's because when God designed us, he built us in a way that we would connect with a spouse, not only through our personalities and our souls and our dialogue and interaction, but even through our physical bodies. It is really, really cool the way God designed us to work with a spouse. And it really is a beautiful thing. And I could read dozens of verses about this, but let's just look at a few. Right there in the beginning of the Bible, Genesis 2:24, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Then later on in 1 Corinthians 6:16, or do you not know that he who is joined to a prostitute becomes one body with her? For as it is written, the two will become one flesh. Matthew 19:6, so they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. So if you've been around divorce, you know exactly how painful that is. What God has joined, let not man separate. So a married couple, when they divorce, it is one flesh splitting into two. And that's why people who, when they go through that, they describe it as if their soul is being torn apart. Imagine your body being torn into two bodies. And imagine how painful that would be. That's the equivalent of what's happening in their soul. And of course that would be painful. So your soul is tearing into two pieces. And so, you know, you're going to be miserable. And that's why when you see people going through divorce, it's one of the most painful things to see. And so when our body connects with another person, it's beginning to grow that connection, because God designed us in that way, that when we're physical and we're intimate, you know, that's something that's for marriage. So when we do that, it just naturally, you know, our souls try to make that connection. And when that growth begins, you give that person some of your heart. And today, people try to separate the physical connection from the emotional connection. And that is not possible. That is completely impossible. It's a myth. It's a lie. It's untrue. You cannot separate the two because one builds the other. And, you know, you hear stories of prostitutes and they feel completely empty inside and they can't make genuine connection with others. And that makes sense, right? And so that man from my church saying you are burning out your ability to fall in love, that's what he was referring to. And because when we give someone our heart, when we give that out, we can never get it fully back. We can't get it all back. And you know, we can do a pretty darn good job of like recovering it most of it and most of the time, but never all of it. And for example, like say your first kiss, that is a very intimate thing. If you kiss a girl and then you don't marry her, then you can't have your first kiss with your wife. And, you know, it might not seem like that big of a deal, but think about every time you do something with a girl or every time in, you know, when you're watching a bad video online or every time you look at someone with a dirty mind out in public. And for the fellas, that's tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of times in our lives that we are doing it. And it adds up, and it adds up big time, big time. And I think back to the first girl I had a crush on. I was, you know, wild, out of my mind, head over heels for this girl. And when that didn't work, the next girl, you know, I was really into the next girl. And then the next girl I had a crush on after her, I liked her a lot. And then my next crush, yeah, I liked her, and so on. And looking back, I noticed that I stopped getting that childlike giddiness when I was talking to a girl that I had a crush on. I stopped having those butterflies in my stomach. It used to be, I remember getting a text from a girl that I liked. I would be over the moon. It would be the greatest. I'd be like, oh, I got text. Oh, I'm the greatest person alive. And I would just be very happy. And that slowly diminished with, you know, every different time. And part of what I realized was I was giving my heart out to all these people. I was giving my heart out to people who I've never even met, to people I've never even seen in real life. And I was giving bits and pieces of my heart out randomly, here you go. And I was even giving bits and pieces of my heart out to my phone screen, to my phone. You know, girls I saw online, you know, I wasn't thinking about marrying them, but by watching porn or lewdness or whatever it might have been, I was giving my heart out. And my soul, it was trying to initiate that process. It was trying to begin that being one flesh with this person I've never even met. And then I hear those words, you are burning out your ability to fall in love. And I was petrified when I heard those words. It hit me so hard. I might never be able to love a wife properly. And that fear gripped me with a grasp of iron. And that was from 1 year. 1 year of watching pornography. That fear gripped me so severely. By the way, that was one thing that convinced me. Doing that to millions of kids, pornography, it needs to be 100% illegal. Anyways, that's off topic. That's not what I'm talking about today. When this man from my church told me this, he was talking about guys who had been sleeping around with dozens of women. And I've remained, well, in that sense, at least pure. But even with what I've done, I was so crippled by that fear. Perhaps I wasn't able to love anyone. I was just thinking about these guys. Imagine being a guy like that who you've, it seems like it'd be impossible to get your heart back. Anyways, I looked back to my previous relationships and I realized, I remembered my first kiss. And when I went through that breakup, it was heart-wrenching. And then I think about the relationships where I was more chaste. And when those relationships ended, it was like, yeah, bummer, but I was okay. And, you know, this isn't in my show notes, but thinking back to one time when I really started focusing on being chaste in my relationships, I broke up with this girl who was, perfect, checks all the boxes, you know, Christian, open theist, dispensationalist, you know, pro-life, anti-abortion, all the boxes or whatever. But I was focusing really hard on being chaste in that relationship. And this girl, you know, she was like the greatest girl in the world. But when I broke up with her, I wasn't destroyed. I wasn't, you know, like healing over at the wayside, you know, vomiting and being sick to my stomach because we had broken up. And I was thinking, like, looking back to other girls who were, you know, I suppose in retrospect, they were kind of disasters and not spouse material at all. When I broke up with them, when it hadn't been chased, it was remarkably painful. It was like world crushing. Like I thought the world, like the sun would not rise in the morning. But it really just does go to show that when you listen to the Bible and you follow its advice and you do what it says, it will protect you and it will protect your heart from being destroyed. And so I don't know. That is just really cool to see that. Yeah, the Bible works. What a cool testimony. The Bible, it works. It works. Anyways, that was all off topic. But yeah, I looked back and I realized that in those relationships where I'd been chased when we broke up, I was okay. And I realized that looking through my past relationships, every single time that I had been unchaste, I was giving my heart out to such a significant degree. And now, years later, I'm grateful. I think I've recovered a lot of my heart and I think I've gotten a lot of it back. And that's by the grace of God. Hallelujah. But, and it's sad that I have to put a but after that, but I still think I haven't gotten all of my heart back. And I don't know if I will. I don't know if that's possible. And so now, if I get married, I hope to get married. We'll see. I can't give my wife 100% of my heart. You know, obviously, we're supposed to give all of our hearts to the Lord, but you understand my point. And because of that, my wife, tragically, assuming I get married, she is going to suffer. And because a man should be able to pour himself out fully into his wife and to love her as Christ loves the church. And now I don't have 100% of my heart that I can give. I don't have all of it to give a woman. And my sin from when I was 15 years old, say I get married when I'm 25 or something, I don't know. My sin from when I was 15 years old is going to hurt my wife. And I knew it was wrong at the time. When I was 15, I knew it was wrong, but I had no idea it would hurt someone else years down the line I had never even met. And that is the nature of sin. Sin is a wrecking ball of destruction that will cause so many unintended consequences so far down the line. And, you know, theoretically, say I don't get married, you know, it's still sinful and it's still hurting all those girls and their future husbands. You know what? I got through 2% of my notes on this show. This is a topic I've thought very long and very hard about, and I'm honestly pretty passionate about being chastity, and so I think I might turn this into a bit of a broadcast event, because I really do think it's important, especially because I'm ending on such a negative, sad note. I want to continue this and return with some more upbeat and encouraging stuff, but that'll have to wait until next week. I don't want to give off the idea that I have it all figured out. I mean, by the grace of God, I'm not addicted how I was. But, you know, I don't have it all figured out. But this is something I'm really, really passionate about. And I think it's dreadfully important. I wanted to talk today about why it's important. And I thought that would take maybe 4 minutes, but I spent the entire show on it. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap up this show, and we'll talk about this more next week. Again, reminder to pray for us at the Capitol as you're hearing this, if you're hearing this live or shortly after it's been published on KGOV.com. I'm most likely testifying at the Capitol against the most radical pro-choice bill in the nation right now. And so prayers for that would be so, so, so appreciated. And if you think you find value in this show, my show, The Dominic Inyart Show, Bob Inyart Live, Theology Thursday, Real Science Radio, whatever it is, you know, I ask that you reach out and perhaps make a donation to help keep us on air. That would be so, so unbelievably appreciated. Even reach out, give us an email. You know, it's just such an honor to get to communicate with you guys. You know, you are the brightest audience in the country. And I know that's kind of a backhanded compliment that my father, Bob Inyart, came up with. But it really is true. I really do enjoy talking with you guys. I want to cultivate our relationships more. So I'd always love for you guys to reach out. We'll continue this, Lord willing, next week. This is Dominic Inyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.